True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin, your host. Sorry again for the little mini delay. I was battling with the old computer. So anyway, True Wealth is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Waugh. 9920 7301 North Division Street, inside the Division Hill Clock Tower Plaza. As you've probably all become grossly bored with hearing, we've been in business for over 20 years. We buy and sell all forms of rare coins, precious metals, scrap gold, jewelry, diamonds. We are what they call a full-service rare coin and precious metals broker, dealer, depository service, which means when I travel, when I used to travel to the shows a lot, to industry shows, there's a lot of dealers that specialize. And there's a twofold thing here that's kind of important. There's a lot of people with niches, and then there's your sales-oriented, I call them marketing companies. When you get into numismatics, coins, whatever it may be, there's companies that they just become specialists. Like I got an application the other day from a guy who specializes in, you know, the attribution of ancient Greek and Roman coins. Well, that's neat, but that is a minuscule fraction of our business. We deal in everything in volume, and we're knowledgeable. We're experienced. We're professional. We have a mammoth knowledge base, a phenomenal library, although books are becoming obsolete. I stared at my library the other day, and I mean, a lot of these coin books are not cheap to buy because they're so rare. I mean, you know, how many people, you know, need a special book on the, you know, private token issues of the German states, you know, from 1882 to 1897? Probably not a lot. And these books are $100 a piece and so on. And I was looking at this massive library I've got, and I'm like, man, what do I do with that thing? Times have changed so much. A lot of this information is on the internet, but it's terrible to find in our business. It's horrible when, you know, these certain coin sites for foreign coins, like there's one called Numismaster, which is a dealer's site that we use. And it's like, you know, put in the name of the country and now put in the denomination and now put in the year. Well, you know, the other day I was putting in, like I just mentioned, German states. I was putting in a coin that was from Frankfurt. Well, no, that's wrong. You need to know that it's the German states. And then, you know, Frankfurt is a subcategory, and it's just hard. It was a lot easier when you flip through books. The problem is a lot of these companies aren't updating books anymore, which actually brings me to another odd fact. I do so much of my Bible study online, and it's so crazy how different it is. I was talking the other day with my daughter, because we were, you know, I was sitting there with a hardbound Bible, and we were talking about the variation between the hardbound Bible and the internet Bible, the blue letter Bible or whatever it is. And it's the blue letter Bible's a blast because you click and you're looking at the Greek and the Hebrew and you're learning, and it's really cool. But then you can't remember what verse you read yesterday. You know, you're like, oh man, I know that's in there. I know it is. Where was I? When you have that hardbound Bible, boom, you're right there. And it's really interesting how God gave us the Word, right? He is the Word. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God. The Word was God. And there's so much power, folks, in the spoken word. There's so much power in the written word, right? I mean, think about it. God gave us that incredible ability, that phenomenal ability to speak and to transfer information. And the biggest problem with humans is we accept everything as a baseline behavior. We just accept who we are and what we are. And then we start to think about this retarded stuff like evolution, you know. And I've been doing probably way too much study lately on creationism and the flood, and just looking at the evidence all around the earth, and you know, I could go on and on. I mean, folks, I am telling you, the evidence is so big for the Word, for the Bible. It's there. It's everywhere. You even look at the Grand Canyon. You know, people are like, they like to talk about the deep canyons and how they've carved through, you know, massive amounts of water running off. But what they don't talk about is up above the canyons, those big, huge flat areas. Well, in hydrology, when huge amounts of water run off, they run off in sheets. The first runoff is the sheets before it gets down into the gullies and ravines and goes around things. And water apparently has a current at the top that is just a powerful razor blade style sheet. That's why these huge, flat, unbelievable areas outside the Grand Canyon exist. The water was just pouring in sheets, in just a solid sheet, and it was literally just shaving the top off. You know, people think, well, that doesn't make sense. Well, how can water cut through rock, right? Folks, now, you know, modern technology, we use plasma cutters to cut steel. Plasma cutters are the hottest, you know, most powerful cutting tool, most accurate cutting tools ever. Guess what they are made of? Water. You shoot water. Water, you use high pressure water to cut steel. Water is cool stuff. I mean, you think about it. We need it to live. It gives us oxygen. It gives us hydrogen. It nourishes us. It doesn't have any calories. We're made up 6% water? I mean, when we get cremated, there ain't much left of you. Water is amazing. God is amazing. The creation is phenomenal. And there's so much evidence around us of the great flood. And the one thing that, you know, I battle with is this whole concept of, you know, the days and how long things took. But, you know, when God says there was morning and evening, a day, that's all we need to know. Near the end of the Bible, he says the sun will get brighter, and it says as bright as 7 days. He doesn't say is seven times as bright. It's just interesting how he maintains that standard. So he is somehow calculating a day by the amount of energy emitted from the sun. Whatever that means, I don't know. But I can tell you that when you get into the whole six-day theory, it kind of makes sense. The question of the universe being created in 6 days, 7 days, whatever, is a different question, because where I get stumped is when it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And then it says, now the earth was without form and void. Now, why would he say that? I mean, would he say it just to let you know that he's about to create life? Or why would he even, you know, why? He doesn't say the creation of the heavens is one of the days. He does begin to have the lights of the heavens and all that as part of the process, but because something's changing, something's visibly changing. Is the light finally getting to Earth? Is there a massive dark cloud cover that's removed? Is there cosmic gases in our solar system that block the sun from the Earth and suddenly those are blown away? We don't know. But we do know that he is massive and he has done some incredible things. And the other thing that is absolutely mind-boggling to me is the number of stories, myths, whatever you want to call them, of all the different flood traditions. There's so many global flood traditions. I mean, it is unbelievable. There is no way that it's not possible. The other thing that's amazing is in Genesis 10, when after the flood, and he goes through the genealogies, and then he goes and he says, and, you know, basically the people covered the entire earth. He says, They went out all around the earth. And then, you know, when you, that's completely inconsistent with evolution. There's so much evidence of early travel, much longer than ago than they ever thought, that man was intelligent. They were very, very intelligent from the very beginning, you know. I mean, there's so much evidence of early travel around. I mean, there's coins found everywhere that don't belong where they're, you know, where they're found and at all. I mean, thousands and thousands of years old. And, you know, so everything biblically just keeps proving out. The problem is when they find it, what do? They say, that's an anomaly. That's an anomaly. Well, that's just an anomaly. That's not consistent with what we're preaching or teaching or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, the other thing they're putting on us now is this crazy global climate change. I mean, can you believe that we have gone from global cooling when I, you know, clear back in the 70s, global cooling, folks, global cooling. You know, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and it's going to cause this terrible global cooling. And then all of a sudden they're like, well, that's not really happening. So I had a professor in college in the 80s, liberal, and he did not buy the global cooling. And he told us, he said, be prepared. They're going to come up with global warming. Now, back then, he didn't buy into all this stuff. He was a liberal, but that wasn't, to be a liberal, you didn't have to believe in all this religion. And they've got this stuff, and that's exactly what it is. It's a religion. And I say that because there's no solid evidence. Folks, we have hit a time of foolishness, a time of lies, deception, you know, the Russia, Donald Trump collusion, and there's no evidence of that. We've got terrorist bombings going on throughout London. You know, they've been letting these people in forever. These guys are whack job cuckoo nuts. Our founding fathers went after them first and foremost militarily to get rid of the scourge. Folks, there is a time and a place where it is okay to have an enemy. And especially when it is a spiritual enemy. If a religion is creating monsters, which as Trump said, don't call them monsters, they will appreciate that. Who would appreciate being called a monster? Someone who's pretty sick, right? If a religion is creating monsters, I would say that there's something wrong with that religion, wouldn't you? I think there is. I think it's a pretty sick religion. And, you know, I'm getting so tired of hearing, well, okay, we can call it radical Islam. Radical Islamic terror. As long as you say radical, it's okay. You can't call it Islamic terror. Obama wouldn't even use the words. Now, I was thinking today, and you have to think about this. This is kind of creepy. Obama had a number of the high-ranking Taliban, if you want to call them, Al-Qaeda members at the White House. Absolute radicals. Radical Arabic Islamic terrorists visited the White House countless times. Obama showed his Islamic colors over and over in his speeches. He made it clear to them that he was Muslim. Now, what's crazy is during his reign, there really was no Islamic attacks on our soil, and especially not from the organized level. Think for a moment, what if He was having these guys, he was sending the message out, I'm one of you, and he had a lots of power, and he had these meetings, and he said, I am one of you, I am your leader in a way. I'm infiltrating America with Islamic jihad, so kick back, don't attack us. Go along with my narrative. As part of the Muslim Brotherhood, as part of this seven-stage process of taking over the world, go with me on this. Because there is a seven-step process that was established for Islamic jihad in the 90s, I believe it was. It's called the seven-step plan, or, you know, however you want it. It's a 20-year, seven-step process that is definitely underway. And I've discussed it before, and I'm going to talk about it again. It is this in the... First, they have the first phase, okay? This is supposed to have lasted from 2000 to 2003, called the Awakening. It's already been carried out. That started with 9/11, okay? Now, the weird thing is there's such a dark influence here that I believe there's so much evidence that the 9/11 attack was instigated by more than just the Arabs. It was instigated by, I believe, People for a New American Century. The PNAC was People for a New American Century. It included a lot of important people. It included Cheney. It was very influential. It included Rumsfeld. It included all the people that weren't available the day of the attack to stop it or to make proper decisions to sustain defense. And it was very, the PNAC was very influential in changing our foreign policy as well as promoting like favorable news coverage about going to war with Iraq after the attacks of 9/11. And the Iraq War was formed by those efforts and the resulting propaganda campaign to convince the American people that attacking Iraq was tantamount to attacking terrorists and others who threaten the U.S. The PNAC is closely related to all these other prominent think tanks, including the American Enterprise Institute and its offices, and it goes on and on. These guys were very, very involved from the very beginning. And this is also in conjunction with the fact that Donald Rumsfeld, the day before the attack, had his secret meeting or private meeting, emergency meeting, with Congress to announce that they were missing $2.4 trillion. $2.4 trillion. True. Folks, not making it up. True. What can you do with $2.4 trillion? You can make a pretty good movie production. So there's so many people that were so deeply involved in this that I know that the terrorists, they were involved, some of them. A lot of them weren't. A lot of them got back to Saudi Arabia. There's some of them that say they saw their names on lists and they're like, wait a minute, I wasn't even there. And there's just so much suspicion surrounding 9/11. Now, I know that 9/11 is a ways in the past and it's becoming really old news. But you have to understand, it was the grand scheme to change America. It was as profound, folks, as the creation of this nation. It was the beginning of the decline and destruction of America. It really was. It has changed us permanently. It has created so much dissension, and there's so much bad information, and people know when they're being lied to, and they're, you know, they, and it create, it makes them crazy. So 9/11, although it was the beginning of this first phase of this seven-step jihad plan, it was not, it was put together by a larger conglomerate. The aim of the attacks was to provoke the U.S. in declaring war on the Islamic world and awakening the Muslims. And so the first phase was judged by the strategists and masterminds behind Al-Qaeda to be very successful. Right, this guy named Hussein wrote. He said the battlefield was opened up and the Americans and their allies became a closer and easier target. The terrorist network is also reported as being satisfied that its message can now be heard everywhere. Isn't that the truth? I was listening the other day to a lady talking about how they recruit, how they have all this social networking and all this stuff so they can recruit people. And I don't remember who I was with, but I looked at him and I go, how the heck can you recruit people with that crap? How do you recruit? You know, and but I remember when I was a young man, a little bit confused, angry, frustrated. Now, I wasn't raised in an Islamic culture, but, you know, there was guys who thought it would be cool to be a Vietnam. I mean, it would, they just thought it was meaningful, you know, and they, and when you're young, you're narcissistic. You look totally at yourself and you think the whole world. If you ever saw the movie The Truman Show with Jim Carrey, where they created this massive fake world, technically, at least a city and a culture and climate and everything, for him. And he was on a live reality TV show. When you are young, a lot of us, unfortunately, whether you want to believe it or not, think that you're on the Truman Show. You think the world revolves around you. So in turn, you think that your actions are that profound. And you think, what, you're going to get some shock factor out of friends and family? I don't know. You think the whole world's going to know who you are? I don't know. But a lot of these guys, when they're going down, they write a letter to one of the high clerics and they say, oh, please pray me to Allah. You know, I want to go get my virgins now. And they've got this crap in the Quran about how sex in paradise is way different than sex on earth. You get all these virgins and all this stuff and sex goes on forever and ever and ever. And when you're a young man, that's kind of important to you. And it's absolutely crazy, but it's true. This is how they bait these kids in. Because that's the only thing I could come up with to even conceive of this. How in the world would anybody want to go blow themselves up? I do also know from a friend who's in the CIA, he's told me that many of these bombings, these suicide bombers, by the time they get there, now it's getting a little different. But he said they used to get, you know, they'd have these meetings. They'd say, who wants to give a, you know, they'd peer pressure people into doing it, especially women. Now, who would blow up women? I mean, seriously. And they would pressure these people. And they'd get to the point where they've overcommitted and they were terrified. And they won't let them stop or back out. They push them into situations that are terrible. There's so much more of this going on globally than we realize, folks. We hear about the big ones that hit the news. There's many, many more little ones going on all the time. So the second phase of this seven-phase 20-year plan was, they called it opening eyes, according to this Hussein guy who designed it. And he says, it's the period we are now, which this is an old article, that he said it would last. And here's what's interesting. This is what proves it's even more accurate, because this is this guy talking back in like 05, I think. He says it's the period we're in now and should last until 2006. He says the terrorists hope to make the Western conspiracy aware of the Islamic community. And he said that that phase, the second phase, or opening the eyes, is a phase in which Al-Qaeda wants an organization to develop into a movement. The network is banking on recruiting young men during this period. And then it said, Iraq should become the center for all global operations, with an army set up there, bases established in other Arabic states. So second phase, pretty obvious, worked out, didn't it? We went to war there. They started to recruit. They created the community. You start to get Al-Qaeda. You start to get all these things going. And here we are. Eventually ISIS, right? The third phase, he said, the rising and standing up. Now, this is a guy talking in 05 predicting this. He said the rising up is going to last from 07 to 10. There's going to be a focus on Syria. They say, prophesies Hussein. Based on what his sources told him, the fighting cadres are supposedly always prepared, and some are in Iraq. Attacks on Turkey and even more explosive in Israel are predicted. Al-Qaeda's masterminds hope that attacks on Israel will help the terrorist group become a recognized organization. The author also believed that countries neighboring Iraq, such as Jordan, are also in danger. Then we go on to the fourth phase, which is supposed to last from 2010 to 2013. Hussein wrote that Al-Qaeda will aim to bring about the collapse of the hated Arabic governments. Now, this is what Obama did for us, right? The Muslim Brotherhood. Let's go take out Libya. Let's take out, of course, we took out Saddam Hussein already. They hated him. Why? Because he controlled. He was a leader. Folks, we as America are fools when it comes to this part of the world. No, I'm not an expert. Have I been there? Yes. Have I spoken to people that I think know their stuff over there? Yes. I've spoken with a general in the Mossad who's also got his PhD in Israeli history. And he's privy to a lot of information. He's a very, very powerful, productive man over there. And he told me clearly that this is coming about in exactly the way that these guys have predicted. So between 10 and 13, in other words, he told me that this is a clan system. When we come in, I don't know if you remember, but when we were going to do, you know, democracy in Iraq, we're going to form, and you know, they're having their first democratic election, yay, you know, and they don't, they're the clan system. It's like going down to L.A. where you got the Crips and you got the Bloods and whatever else, and you're going to force your way in there through might, and you're going to start fighting the Crips, and you're going to start fighting the Bloods, and then you're going to force them to have an election to choose who runs the area. Okay, what are you going to get? When they vote, you're going to get another big, powerful gang leader who might makes right. You know, the guy can shoot his way to the top, or he can be elected to the top. You're going to end up with the same guy. And this is the problem. This is what we've done. Karzai in Afghanistan's a prime example. The guy was as corrupt as they come. When that Navy SEAL helicopter was shot down with 26 Navy SEALs on it, for goodness sakes, why they had that many on one ever is nuts. They went down what they call the Valley of Death in a helicopter under pretenses they could not shoot first in an old Vietnam Chinook helicopter. You know, everything was wrong. Everything was changed out at the last minute. These guys were fried, toasted. They were set up. And Karzai announced their demise an hour before any of the information had officially gone out. He was obviously in communication with one of the gunmen, one of the people that shot the thing down. He was in on it. He's a bad man. He became extraordinarily rich as the president of Afghanistan. We were pumping money. That's one bad habit of the U.S., folks. The government of the United States is very, very sloppy with the taxpayers' money. And that's exactly what it is. It's not their money. It belongs to you and it belongs to me. And yet we give these people authority to spend it. It goes to their head. They don't respect you or I. They have authority, they think. They have power, they think. And they do whatever they darn well please. This is a huge problem, is it not? And so that they throw money around. I've got a friend who, you know, was at the top of, you know, numerous Army Ranger raids. And he said these guys walk around behind them with suitcases full of cash. and reimburse everybody for any damage that's caused to these buildings where these terrible terrorists live or are hiding. I mean, he told me heinous stories. After Abu Ghraib, that was the prison camp or whatever you want to call it, where we were abusing the Iraqis, and we were, but it was all under orders. After that, they had a CIA and FBI guy following them around, criticizing, critiquing everything they did, and another guy from I don't know what branch of government going around behind them, paying everybody for the damages caused to an extraordinary event level. Extraordinary payback. Far, far more than any of the property was ever worth. These people were getting rich off the war. Well, we're going broke. So the fourth phase was the takedown of Gaddafi and the takedown of Hosni Mubarak. Of course, it followed up the takedown of Saddam. These were the leaders that were okay. Gaddafi was crazy, but he was good. Hosni Mubarak was awesome. Like I've mentioned before, happily gone to Egypt during that time. Happily went to Egypt. Now, no way. And we put in Morsi, a kook. You know, it's crazy. Now we were talking about deposing the president of Syria under Obama. Why? Because Obama wanted to keep this stuff going on. It wasn't about gas attacks. There was so much argument over Syrian attacks. I mean, there was so much argument over whether or not they even did it. And guess what? The evidence started to show that they didn't. Have you heard another word about the sarin gas attacks in Syria? The red line that Obama drew and never stepped over? No. Why? Maybe Obama, in this case, was a little brighter in understanding these guys' game. Because what came out from various sources after that was that the rebels made it look like there was a sarin gas attack. All they showed was a few videos of people with tears coming out of their eyes. Experts said that's not how sarin works. They said you get a minute fractional vapor, you're dead. And if you get it on your face, it just peels off. It's terrible. They said it's a horror show. That's not what the videos showed. So Trump had to show his strength over there, and then he did. And I'm not criticizing the guy. I think he's a little bit trigger happy. I don't know that. I think he's just bought into the narrative heavily. And the problem with that is he's willing to walk into a fight that may be a trap. That's my concern. So we've passed the fourth phase, which is, again, the takedown of obstruction, obstructionist governments or impeding forces. We've moved to, then we go to the fifth phase, which has just ended. The fifth phase of the 20-year, seven-step plan for Islam to take over the world is when the Islamic State is created. Now, remember, I am reading something that was written in the 90s and commented on by this Ibrahim Cuckoo Bird, Raymond Ibrahim, some, you know, he's bad. We'll just put it that way. He's a prophet and in Islam. And he's basically saying, he's predicting the future. Now, I'm talking about 2013 through 16 of what has happened. He's speaking in 2005 of what will happen. And guess what? Right on the money. He says it'll be a point at which an Islamic state or caliphate can be declared. How about ISIS, the Islamic State? The plan is that by this time, between 2013 and 16, Western influence in the Islamic world will be so reduced and Israel weakened so much that resistance will not be feared. Al-Qaeda hopes that by then the Islamic State will be able to bring about a new world order. Now, are they bringing about a new world order? I think so. Everybody's worried. They're on eggshells all the time. Why did ISIS rise up? Because of what they said, that Western influence in the Islamic world will be so reduced. Now, the next part I'm not so sure of. He said, and Israel weakened so much. Now, that's true, isn't it? Because Obama came in and pulled the rug out from under them. That was a tender time in the Middle East. That, and he says that resistance will not be feared by the Islamic. They weren't even afraid. They just built up like cockroaches in Iraq. They built the Islamic State. So then we get past 16. We get Trump in office. This is a spiritual journey. What happens in sixth phase? This guy says that from 2016 onwards, there will be a period of total confrontation. As soon as the caliphate has been declared, the Islamic army, okay, he's saying as soon as the caliphate has been declared as the Islamic army, ISIS, ISIL, whatever you want to call them, it will instigate, he says in quotes, the fight between believers and non-believers, unquote, which has so often been predicted by Osama bin Laden. Now we've got Trump, the battle-hardened warrior in spirit. They're saying this is it, total confrontation. Then the seventh phase is their final stage. This is what they call definitive victory. Hussein writes that in the terrorists' eyes, because the rest of the world will be so beaten down by the 1.5 billion Muslims, the caliphate will undoubtedly succeed. He says this phase should be completed by 2020, although the war should not last longer than 2 years. So far, folks, they're right on the money. They've got the right president in the United States. We've got our structure built. Now, is this going to be proven wrong? Boy, do I hope so. But now we've got 18 years of absolute predicted accuracy. It's going to be over by 2020. That's their prediction. It's going to be no more than a two-year war. Well, guess what that means? That means in 2018, it's going to get nasty. That means we're probably going to war with a bunch of Islamic radicals. And they're saying that they're going to have a major impact. Folks, I'm warning you now. How do these people operate? The way they operate is by bringing us all the way back to the Dark Ages. They destroy electricity, right? They're going to destroy electronics. I mean, let's just be hypothetical. What if there's a percentage of chance this happens? If you don't understand the power of nukes, now, when you've got North Korea possessing nukes, and you've got these guys, we don't even know. Do you know how much nuclear power, in other words, uranium-238, is missing around the globe, literally missing? Some of it was last known to be in Somalia decades ago. Who's got it? What are they doing with it? How about Iran? Iran is working to build a nuke. Iran is the absolute heartbeat of radical Islamic terror. Syria gives them refuge. We've got a problem. This is far from over. We are experiencing the quiet before the storm. What has terrorism done? It has caused an absolute mayhem and chaos in the House of America. We are a family in a house, and we are bickering among ourselves as if never before. This is what happens. This is why in a marriage, when a marriage goes through severe trauma and stress, the divorce rate goes up because it begins fighting and bickering, because the stress levels go up, the intensity goes up. People start to get unsure of themselves. They get angry. They're carrying a lot of stress. Things start to bother them more, and they start to get super angry and point the finger and blame people. And, I'm going to go ahead and agree that the left is not very rational right now. They're absolutely unreasonable. They're not using any common sense. And in my mind, it really does boil down to the difference between those who have a belief in conservative, biblical, godly, precepts and principles, and those who don't, the secular humanists. It's a battle. Once we go to war with these guys, and that will change some, that contention will continue to rise in other areas, and we will begin to self-destruct from the inside out. What made America great, folks, really is being systematically destroyed. The firm foundational precepts and principles of the Constitution of the United States are being challenged every moment of every day. You know, Trump's quote-unquote travel ban will be upheld for sure. I don't mean the opposition to it will be upheld. I mean it will be upheld. It will be okayed. It'll be allowed because it's totally within his constitutional rights. But the problem is the propaganda lies. Anchors, you've got news anchors that are calling Trump a worthless piece of blank who blah, blah, you know, filthy, foul, junk. Kathy Griffith, a redheaded comic that's off her rocker too, holds up a decapitated head of the president of the United States of America, the most powerful man on planet Earth. Now, I'll tell you, we need to respect that position. Last year, for my anniversary around March, my wife and I went to a place called the Brando in Teacheroa, Tahiti, or 30 miles north of Tahiti, a private island that used to, private island chain that used to be owned by Marlon Brando. Absolute magnificent paradise. The best place I've ever been on earth. The best 2 weeks of my life. Unbelievable. You know, two-star Michelin chefs and just your own lagoons and, you know, sea turtles and sea rays and sharks and you know, I mean, just, you know, unbelievable beauty. Magnificent beauty. Well, this year, around the exact same time, Obama and his wife were there, and he was writing his memoirs. Well, we were thinking of going, my wife and I, and we decided to go to St. Lucia. This is before we knew Obama was there. And I was talking, and I said, man, that would have been cool. I'd have loved to go there and meet Obama. And she's like, Obama? You'd want to meet Obama? I'm like, sure I would. Of course, once their Secret Service checked me out and listened to my show, they'd probably have me removed from the island. But if I was able to get past that, which is unlikely, but I, like I told her, I said, even though I disagree with the man, he was still the president of the United States. I still honor and respect that position. I have a cousin, I guess my wife's cousin, who is a high-ranking prosecutor in Seattle, who Obama came there for, you know, whatever reason, and during campaigning for Hillary, I suppose, something, and he was in a very small group. Well, I think he was in charge of Obama's security. And he spent a fair amount of time with Obama, and he has all these pictures of Obama holding his child and, you know, all this stuff. And some relatives of ours said, what? You let Obama hold your child? Holy moly. You know, and like I was saying, he's still the president of the United States. I definitely disagree with the guy. I think the guy is way, 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 way away from my belief system, but he's still the president of the United States. It's still cool to meet the guy. I mean, in all honesty, and obviously you're not going to make an impact on the guy. He's a hardcore ideologue. But the point is this. You don't make fake decapitated heads covered in blood of the president of the United States and then whine when you lose your job and the Secret Service decides to check you out, which is exactly what's happening with Kathy Griffith. She's a fool. She's a proverbial fool. And then when she comes out, what is it? It's the men. Oh, it's white men are trying to hold me down. She goes off on that. It's because I'm a woman. And she goes off on that. And she says, no president has ever done this to anybody ever again, and they're trying to ruin me, even though their tweet just said she should be ashamed of herself. And some of his relatives said, she needs to lose her job with CNN. And she's like, they're trying to ruin me. And she gets an attorney and acts like she's going to sue. And, you know, and he's using the power of his office. And, you know, the problem is he's still a person. He is the president and he's a person, and we need to honor and respect the seat. He's got some super strengths. One of them is not good communication. Now, people that meet with him in small settings say he's terrific. in large groups when he tweets and comes to the mic, bar the door, the guy kind of lets it all roll out a little heavy, doesn't he? So, according to this 7-stage, 20-year plan, we are walking into trouble. What do you do? Okay, I think wisely you look at biblical end times prophecy, which does unfortunately tell us things might get a little rough. It also tells us that people are going to be casting their gold and silver in the streets at the end of the end. And, you know, I mean, Peter's like, people at the end times are going to say, where's the promise of his coming? Everything just continues on as it's always been. Well, that's a big lie because it hasn't always been. We know about the flood. We have all kinds of this kind of stuff. We've got the creation. Thousands of years really isn't that long when you start to think about it. You think 1,000 years, if people average 70 years, if you figure, you know, every 50 years you say, tag, you're it, and another generation goes on, that's only, you know, every 50 years, that's 20 generations. I mean, it's not a lot for 1,000 years. It's just not. It's and these stories that have passed on, like about the flood, are definitely, you know, when they're passed on generation to generation. We always talk about the telephone game and how information gets so construed. But when you see the similarities in these global traditions, you start to realize there's no way that there isn't something to it. They all have, you know, they have 8 people. They have all kinds of, you know, similarities. I mean, it's absolutely unbelievable how many similarities there are. I mean, they're just, when you go through all these, and then, of course, they always go, well, it's all from the Epic of Gilgamesh. Well, the Epic of Gilgamesh is the dumbest one you've ever seen, okay? You've got, when you go through these things, you've got Babylonian, when you look at traditional historical myths, legends of a global flood, okay, there's numerous nationalities that have them. But you've got 2 different Assyrian, Babylonian ones. You've got, I'm going to just give you a quick list, it doesn't matter, but Persia, Syria, Asia Minor, Greece, Egypt. These are all countries that have global myth floods. Egypt, Italy, Lithuania, Russia, China, India, the Cree Indians, the Cherokee Indians, the Papagayo in Mexico and Costa Rica, the Aztecs, the Peruvians, the Leeward Islands, the Fijians, the Hawaiians, the Tahitians, and on down, right? So here's what they have in common. Half of them believe it's because of man's transgression. About 80% of them believe it was a divine destruction. About 85 or 90% say it's a favored family that was saved. 100% of them say that the flood was global. Okay. In every single one of them, there was an ark provided by some divine inspiration. In 100% of them, the whole earth, like I said, was destroyed by water. In 100% of them, there were humans that were saved, a select group. Now, those humans that were saved range from 3 to 8, right? Well, 8's obvious. That's what was on the ark. But if you look, you've got, you know, you've got his 3 sons and their wives. You've got 3 different DNA chains from the women. There's all kinds of ways to cut it, but it's pretty similar. Countless, like over 50% of these global traditions say that animals were saved. I'm sorry. And folks, this logic that the flood was localized. Now, why would, first of all, in the Bible, it tells us exactly how old Noah was. Down to 70 days, right? And then he spends 100 years building an ark, and he gets all these animals. If it was a localized flood, why didn't he just walk over the mountains? You know what I mean? God was done. The deluge was big. There was a lot going on. God chose Noah. Don't know why, but he did. And he carried him through. And how about the fact that like 85% of all these myths and legends include giants and the fall of man into a very sinful state. So they've got the animals saved. They've got 100% of them say it's universal destruction. About 60, 70% of them say they landed on a mountain. 50% of them say that a bird was sent out from the ark. 50% of them have survivors that worshiped after the issue, after the deluge. And 50% of them say that there was divine favor on those that were saved or preserved. I mean, there is so much similarity in these, it's just not possible that it's not true. And I'll tell you what else, folks. When you read the Bible, you have to look. You don't go, is it true or not? You look at what the intent of the writers was. The writers wrote as if it's a fact, okay? Now, as in the days of Noah, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. Folks, it's going to get kind of tough. It's just going to get tough. Now, my area of expertise is financial. I just say preserve and protect. Buy hard assets. Things might change. Yeah, sure. You get hard assets. We build some pretty cool portfolios. That's where we come in. Gold and silver will be cast in the streets on the final moments of the final day. Paper will be long gone. If power goes out, you're going to want hard assets. And I mean, seriously, diamonds and rubies and, you know, even rare compact collectibles, valuables. It's built into our DNA. Do not think that hard times change man's common sense. When you believe that, you know, you've just got to have an ounce of gold to go down to the store and buy an ounce of bread or a loaf of bread, I hear this stuff. It's dumb. Folks, that's using the same logic that says man long ago was dumb. That somehow if a deluge hits, oh, everybody gets dumb. No, humans are brilliant. They know value. God built the desire for intrinsic value into who we are. It's in our makeup. People know what valuables are. Now, say it doesn't come this fast. Say there's a protection over America, whatever it may be. You've got nothing to lose. To be frank, I am personally building up my collection again. I have my ups and my downs because I buy things like real estate and stuff like this. The buying opportunity is great. The prices are terrific. You can buy incredible stuff at a great value. I mean, silver's nuts. You can buy silver at almost about a third. Yeah, about a third of its if it's high in the last 5 years. Gold, little above half. A lot of numismatic stuff, cheap. Semi-numismatic, cheap. Semi-numismatic are coins that have an intrinsic value that you purchase them for, that have the upside potential for the movement in the metals content as well as the movement in a numismatic market. They are the best place to be. I've been doing this a while. I admit, you know, we may see the dark times, we may not. The Bible says a generation after the regathering of Israel shall not pass away until they see the coming of the Son of Man. That could go anywhere from 2018 all the way up to 70 years after 1967, which would put us in the 2030s. Whatever that may be, I don't know. But I can tell you that after all these years, watching people accumulate silver dollars and collectible items like this, they're the best investment. You want to invest? Don't just buy for panic. Buy for wisdom. You want a solid asset? Get off the grid. Be completely detached from all of it. We provide everything. We provide the portfolios. We provide the storage. We take care of it all. You just come in and we'll build you a nice portfolio. We do 401ks and IRAs. People who tell you you can legally hold your 401k or IRA are not telling the truth. This stuff's being advertised all over. What they're saying, they don't say 401k, they say IRA. IRA means independent retirement account. They're basically mincing words. They're saying, you can have your own IRA at home in a vault. Well, sure you can. You just need to call it your own independent retirement account. But it's not under the tax-exempt umbrella of the government. Don't fall for that lie. Now, what's the advantage of an IRA through the government? You have a tax-deferred status, which is nice, but at the same time, you've got severe penalties. You can't access it. You can't acquire it. So a lot of people will roll out. They'll pay some taxes now, and then the growth over time, first of all, will help them pay the taxes, and secondly, it gives them complete privacy and anonymity and a complete detachment from everything everywhere, and it becomes yours in complete privacy and security. We've got a level of security in our storage facility that is phenomenal. We are guarded in numerous ways. We've got incredible amounts of cameras and security protocols and other things that raise the bar of security to a level I don't need to tell you about. But what I can tell you is 444-0044 is your best phone number to call for your financial well-being. I try not to power pedal. I try not to be a salesman. I always kind of want to do a full-hour infomercial, but I don't really want to offend people. But I'm telling you, I believe in this wholeheartedly. You've got the most beautiful opportunity. The market, the paper stuff has grown and done incredibly well lately. Take advantage of that. You know, bulls get rich, pigs get slaughtered, says Warren Buffett. That means don't hang on in greed. Don't sit there and lust and slobber all over your bank statement. If you're making a nice profit on it and we're way in record territory, get out. So anyway, give us a call. Again, you got our number. It's online, coinsplus.com. All of our recorded radio shows are there. Thank you again for tuning in. Glad to be back. Have a fantastical week. I love the sun, and we'll be back Wednesday. Bye-bye. God bless.